Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
With us now is someone to talk about climate change. Warren Allman is professor of paleontology in the Department of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences at Cornell University. He's on the line from Ithaca, New York. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, John.
When we talk about climate change, often we talk about mass extinction. Edward O. Wilson, of course, is very much the warner of all of us that the implications of climate change and carbon proliferation in the environment is that many species will go extinct. But it's also the case that climate change triggers evolutionary processes as species in a variety of places all over the world find a kind of plan B to move either to adapt or to actually change themselves organically over enough time, if there is enough time, to actually adapt to the climate changes that take place. And all of this got us thinking because there's a meeting in Norway to talk about what's going to happen to the polar bear, which is facing significant environmental stress because of the warming of the Arctic. Warren, what evolutionary processes are triggered by climate change, and is the polar bear a good candidate to adapt?
Well, one of the issues, John, is that we're not just warming the climate. If that were the only thing that were happening, then maybe the implications would be smaller. But we're warming the climate at the same time that we're doing a whole lot of other things. So for centuries, we've been altering the global environment, and all of that has to be factored into the answer of what does climate change mean for the future of evolution. If you roll all human impact into the equation, then it's unquestionable that we're going to be losing species, as you mentioned. That is, of course, part of evolution. Extinction is sometimes viewed as the other side of the coin of evolution, but it's part and parcel of the whole course of evolution. We're going to have a mass extinction, maybe not in our lifetimes, but certainly in the lifetimes of our children or grandchildren. And mass extinction, I mean, kind of end of the dinosaur type stuff.
Right.
We're going to see a huge number of species disappear. We're already seeing alien invasions. That is, we introduce species in places, sometimes on purpose and sometimes not. That is being encouraged by climate change, or it's being affected by climate change. We introduce species to parts of the world, and we change the climate, and they expand. But we're also seeing range changes, geographic range changes. So, for instance, butterflies in Great Britain are moving farther north. And then after all those things, we get to finally what you're mainly talking about, which is what happens within populations. And we're just beginning to see examples of this. And if you Google this topic or if you listen closely to the scientific literature, you'll see what sound like the most esoteric kinds of changes, the tiniest kinds of changes, things like when does a mosquito species go to sleep in the winter? When does it wake up? Who the heck cares about that? Well, that's indicative of the kinds of changes that species tend to undergo when the climate begins to change. The first thing they do is they get up and leave, if they can.
Right. And that's what the grizzlies did, chased out of sort of Texas by human settlement in the prairie. But in places like the jungle canopy, where it's really, really sensitive, where climate changes can actually be instantly catastrophic to species of frog and insect, there's one kind of change. But where is it more elastic? Where can the schedule of wake-ups and going to sleep and emergence from the winter actually produce changes in the organism that we might be able to track?
That's a great question, and we should know the answer to that, and we don't. Evolutionary biologists and ecologists have long tried to come up with generalizations about the narrowness of adaptation of species, say, in the tropics versus the poles. And there are some general rules. In general, species in the tropics tend to be rarer. They tend to be, in many groups of organisms, somewhat more narrowly adapted and to have narrower geographic ranges. And so all of those things should make it should make them more sensitive, as you mentioned. But again, you've got to factor this in as part of a whole picture. The high latitudes, the poles, are going to change more dramatically as a result of climate change than the tropics will.
So the polar bear is really an important species to watch in all of this.
It's an indicator. That's right. It's a bellwether.
All right, so let's talk about humans. Humans, apparently, because they've managed to infest the planet so completely and cause the changes that you're talking about, seem to be really good at this kind of adaptation. If we have competition from a class of species, what is it?
Oh, geez. Well, remember that why we're very adaptable, most of that adaptation has to do with our culture, not our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And when we speak of evolution, we're usually talking about the changes to the bodies of organisms. Humans are successful because, in large part, because we're successful in a cultural way, and we can learn from subsequent generations. We don't have to change our bodies. It would be great if organisms, non-human organisms were like that, but they're not. And so humans are going to adapt, are always going to adapt more quickly because that's what we do. And as you say, that's why we're successful. But other organisms are going to not have that flexibility. And if they do have that flexibility, they're going to exercise it. But if they don't, they're either going to get up and leave, or they're going to die.
Right. Well, let's a very quick question before we go. If there is competition with humans, is it more closer to our species, like, say, mammals, or is it more like insects, mosquitoes, in fact?
We compete with species all the time, and we usually win. One little number to keep in mind in closing is that humans probably use between 20 and 40% of the primary plant productivity of the planet.
Wow.
So we are incredibly effective competitors.
And also vulnerable if that should change or that availability should change. Warren Allman, professor of paleontology in the Department of Earth and Atmospheric Sciences at Cornell University. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John.